Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
A Touch of Grace listeners, I am your host, G.D. Today is an important day. Not only is it Saturday, the 25th of January, 2014, at 1:30 p.m., it is also the day when I introduce a new segment on the show, and that segment is called Queen. Her beauty is three-dimensional, and her soul has many planes. From the womb, she was destined to sometimes walk on rugged roads and travel through storms of adversity, and it was within these trials and tribulations that she would become the powerful woman she is today. Upon no throne she sits, but her courage and character has shattered the pampered images we are accustomed to seeing. Without the crown, it is the colossal strength of this woman that makes her worthy to be called queen. She is a living testament of triumph. In the shadows of substance abuse, she has seen her share of darkness and despair. She knows about slim outlooks and poor outcomes, for her spirit had been cast into the madness of addiction. Spiritual bankruptcy had practically emptied the soul of just about all its light, and when all seemed lost, a translucent apparition appeared. It was bright. It was warm. It was forgiving. It embraced her essence without judgment, and it led her into the waters of redemption and cleansed her soul. Today, she joins us in a celebration of recovery and to share with us tales from the battle and the moment when she stepped back in to the light. I call her friend, but I also call her my sister in sobriety. I welcome the powerful queen, known as Deborah Brooks. Welcome, my friend. How are you this glorious Saturday afternoon? Deborah?
It's so encouraging.
Hey, Deborah, how you doing?
I am blessed and highly favored. Your words are always so encouraging. Thank you for that powerful introduction. I am humbled.
Oh wow. I am humbled because you're here. I am in the presence of one of God's most powerful spirits. So what I'd like to do today is for the listeners, can you share with us how life was before the darkness?
Before the darkness? I don't. It was beautiful. But there was always a shadow. I'm the youngest girl, you know, so I'm everybody's baby. Daddy nicknamed me Golden, you know, because of the color of my skin. At least that's what I thought at first. I later found out because I was his precious gem. I always knew things that people said I shouldn't know. I saw things that people said I shouldn't see. And it was like, and when I say I saw things that people said I should not have seen, I know now that I, visions, you know, I saw angels.
Oh.
At a very early age, I was very inquisitive, and I drank, or I actually didn't drink it. I actually, like, licked the top of some lie. And for those people who were, you know, born prior to 1980, you know what lye is. It's a strong chemical. And the doctor said I wasn't going to make it, and my great-grandmother didn't believe that. She prayed. And then they said that I would not be able to speak. And as you can tell, they were wrong about that also. I went to a Catholic school. My parents loved me. They were separated, but I, you know, the separation didn't affect me because I was with them all, you know. Like I said, I'm the youngest girl. You know, I have a brother younger than me, but he always acted older than me. So, you know, I've been the baby, you know, all along. I was loved. I had a lot of friends, a lot of people that cared about me. But somewhere inside of me, I was uncomfortable. And that's why I say that it was always a shadow. I didn't like me. I grew up in the 60s, and I was too light for my black friends. I was too dark for my white friends. And I was just, for lack of a better statement, I was confused at an early age.
Wow. I can definitely relate to that, being a fair-skinned guy myself as an African-American. So even though the shadows were there, it's great that there was some light. So can you recall, okay, you said you had licked the top, and did you say lie?
Mm-hmm. It's a poison.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Right.
So right then and there, you know, the miracle happened. Your grandmother prayed for you, and the higher power was at work. So can you recall when life started for you in the addiction? Can you recall when it all started?
You know, the disease of addiction. You know, I was a full-blown alcoholic at 13 because I had been drinking since I was like 7. You know, some things happened to me, you know, from a relative, and he gave me wine. He gave me money. He told me he loved me, and the rest I imagine you guys can figure out. Well, I continued to drink. I liked the taste of alcohol. I have never not liked the taste of alcohol. And, you know, back in the day, you know, families were having, you know, family outings, get-togethers, parties, and a lot of times the children went, and then they were put in a back room, and, you know, sometimes we were called out so that we can dance and do the four corners and the twist.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for the adults, you know. And I drank. You know, I sipped out this cup, I sipped out that cup, and my first reality of something being wrong is when I was 13, but it didn't stop. I had tremors, you know, my stash, somebody had discarded it. And I woke up, I'm in the 8th grade, I'm on my way to school, and I can't go to school, I can barely get out the bed. Because I'm queasy, my stomach hurts, I have spots before my eyes, and I'm going through alcoholic withdrawal. I'm 13 years old. You know, my mother,
wow,
which I didn't know at the time, is what she did. She gave me a hot toddy, and I was good to go. 15, 20 minutes later, you know, I'm up, I'm bouncing, I got my clothes on, I'm on my way to school. I'm in the 8th grade. Took me another 20 years to openly admit that something was wrong. So that's
I think that's the alcohol right there. I think that is the most cunning thing about this disease, right? So your mom, mm-hmm, unbeknownst to her, was actually giving you your fix.
You know what? My mother, may her sweet, precious soul rest in peace, was a registered nurse. She worked for Women's General Hospital here in Cleveland, Ohio. And for a lot of the older Clevelanders, Women's General was actually the first female detox. Excuse me. She worked for Mount Sinai. She also moonlighted at CAAA, which was the, you know, drug facility. So Mommy knew that I was an alcoholic, or I was real close to crossing that line. She just didn't know what to do other than to help me, you know what I'm saying, get through my sick days, through my sick parts. Mm-hmm. You know, I imagine she knew enough about the disease of alcoholism to know that until I admitted it, there was nothing she could do anyway but make me comfortable. And when she gave me that hot toddy, it made me comfortable. I was comfortable with alcohol in my system. I'm 13 years old, and I'm comfortable with alcohol in my system.
Well, you know, I think the most powerful part of that testimony is that you were only in the 8th grade. A lot of people out there are under the impression that, you know, alcoholism is just an older person's disease. But from what I know, a lot of people started off at a very early age. And in eighth grade, I knew that the alcohol was around and amongst other things. But like you said, they shoved us in a back room. And so, you know, I played with a lot of toys up until I was probably in the eighth grade because my parents kind of sheltered me from that. And we most certainly couldn't get – if we had access to it, I would have never known because, you know, my love for it didn't happen until a later age. So I think that that is the most compelling part. If somebody is listening today as we celebrate the triumphs of Deborah Brooks, addict and alcoholic, I honestly want to say, if you listen to this episode today, you will find out just how progressive this disease is. And so what I'd like to do, people, places, and things, oh my, can you take us back to the place, when the flames of addiction raged the highest?
The place where they raged the highest. it is probably 1974, 1975. And I'm 17. I've got two sons out of wedlock, and somebody slides me some cocaine. Okay. You know, I'm actually working in a bar. You know, they didn't ask for my age. You know, some people got fired, and my friend worked there, and she said, "Goldie, come on down here," and I go down there, and you know, it's an after-hour place, not an after-hour place, but it's a club. And so 2:33 in the morning, we're cleaning up. I'm a cocktail waitress. We're cleaning up. We're collecting our tips. And we're sitting at the bar, you know, waiting for our pay. And somebody put some powder on the counter. And it was on. I mean, I started there. The actual rage, you know, as you stated, didn't come to years later when I started smoking crack cocaine. Now, let me explain this. I had some all right moments. I had some not-so-bad days, but from the time I first put that substance in my nose until the day I called out from God from deep down in my spirit, nothing was ever really right. Nothing.
Mm. And do you remember what that first moment felt like when you first ingested it? Do you recall what that felt like for you?
You know, actually, I don't. I was just, it was like it was, I was caught up in the moment. You know, I'm drinking, I've been working, I've been listening to the, you know, Tony Slim, he's the DJ, and, you know, we're doing our thing, and they put it there, and I remember it burned, you know, but I'm already so intoxicated that I believe I continue to snort because of the people I was around. You know what I'm saying? Everybody else was doing it, so I did it. I never did anything when I wasn't drinking. If I didn't have a drink, I was good to go. You could have stood me in front of the church, and you know what I'm saying? But once I started drinking, it was everything goes. You know, even I know people who, when they started to what we call in the beginning freebase and then smoking crack, there were people who drank who stopped drinking. They could not drink when they were doing, you know, those particular drugs. I was the other way around. I couldn't do anything unless I had a drink.
Interesting. And so when they ask the question in rehab, you know, what your substance is of choice, so your substance definitely was the alcohol, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first time I went to treatment, of course, I was not an alcoholic. I was, as one of my sponsees say, I was on tour. And, you know, I was in a state of denial. I was being manipulative. I went to treatment. You know, I was at the top of my bottom. I said I was an alcoholic because mostly the meetings that we went to. I knew I had a problem with the drugs. And at this point, I still cannot see the disease of alcoholism. All I can see is the confusion from the from the drugs.
Wow. Like they said, it's cunning and baffling. And so while we're on that leg, and if the listeners will bear with me, because I want to show the progression and then show the after when you're in recovery. So let's talk about the insanity and some of the places that insanity led you. Now, if you feel comfortable talking about a place where you just knew that you definitely, you looked around like, oh, no, I don't need to be here. Do you remember a place or places where this insanity led you?
Everywhere. Everywhere I went, there was some insanity because I was showing up. The insanity was not so much the people and the places. It was in my mind. I had no business, you know, from how I was raised, what I was taught, what I knew to be right or wrong. I was in alleyways, abandoned apartment buildings. I was standing on corners. I remember one time in a hallway at 3 in the morning with two guys, and I mean, I know these guys. They're good friends. But, you know, it's me. You know what I'm saying? And I'm sitting there, and I'm in this hallway at 2 in the morning, and I'm smoking. And and I wasn't uncomfortable. In my mind, I belong there. So the insanity, the type of stuff that you're talking about, no, not really, because I thought I belonged there. See, at this point, God don't want me. He don't like me. By the time I was 9, I had broke all but 3 of the 10 commandments. By the time I was 20, I had broken all of them.
Wow. You know what I like about your spirit is that you're honest and you're genuine, and it talks about that. It talks about, you know, if you're able to be brutally honest with yourself, that's when there's an opportunity for you to get better. And so as you recall these moments, you are definitely opening the eyes of someone out there listening because of your courage. And that's why I was so excited today about this first episode of Queens, because I was going to have someone that I knew was going to tell it like it is. And so the question I have, the next one, where were you at emotionally as the days and nights progressed?
I was tormented. I was scared. I couldn't let anybody know I was scared, but I was fearful. There were times when, you know, I was lady of the night, and I like to call them clients, where they left me because I was crying. I knew I was wrong. I couldn't do it. I didn't want to do it, but the disease was going to make me do it, and I would start crying, and they left. You know, I had one guy say to me, why are you trying to burn me? Why are you trying to kill me? And my first reaction is to, you know, well, I don't have no infection. I don't have no disease. But that's not what he was talking about. He was talking about his soul.
Ooh.
Because, see, the one thing, you know, and the one thing that kept me damaged for so long is that my skin stayed clear. I had pretty hair. My nails were long. I smelled good because I constantly washed up. I was not washing up because I didn't want you to smell me. I was washing up because I was dirty. And I didn't realize that the dirt was from the inside out. So I stayed clean. And my, like I said, my skin stayed clear. So there were a lot of people coming at me because I was, quote, unquote, pretty. And pretty will kill you. When you're in the streets, pretty will kill you. And I guess he looked at me, and believe it or not, I've always had the spirit of discernment. I've always, you know, had this God on me. And I believe what he saw when he thought he was getting ready to lay down with me was not me. He saw that spirit of God that was trying to come out of me. Because, see, at this point, I'm almost done. I'm real close to done, but I'm not there yet.
I've got tears in my eyes. I mean, the way you described that, oh, my God. Why were you trying to burn me? And it was, why were you trying? Oh, my God, that is so powerful. I can't wait to go back and listen to that one. That again, is exactly why you are a queen. Can you describe for us, before we start getting into the uphill or the uphill towards success, can you describe for us the type of addict you were?
fearless and thorough. Nobody that you will ever talk to prior to my day of deliverance will ever call me a player. I was not playing. I was dead serious. I was going at it. If you were in the way, you probably should have moved. Most people got out my way. And the thing about it is I'm 5'1", and I'm bigger now than I've ever been. The heaviest I was prior to, you know, these last couple of years was maybe 125 pounds. But I had no fear. And you could see that I had no fear. So most people really didn't bother me. And then I had, you know, older brothers that kind of helped out with that fear factor. I got in and out of cars. I went in houses. I learned how to pick locks at an early age. And if I didn't have the money and if I didn't feel like standing on the corner, I was going to take what I wanted.
Wow. Well, it's true what they say when you're talking about the cunning and baffled part about this disease is that it is jails, institutions, and death. And when you mentioned earlier that you were at the top of your bottom, I related to that because it is not if, it's when. You know, the more you use, the longer you use, it's just only a matter of time because a lot of the times we're out there driving intoxicated. A lot of the time we're showing up at work, you know, and intoxicated. You know, our whole mental is just so distorted that we're operating off of, you know, whatever that substance of choice is. So the question I have as we talk about redemption now, do you remember where you were the moment when you had gotten, as the commercial says, sick and tired of being sick and tired?
Actually, yes. July 23rd of 1993, it's a Friday, and I'm in a well-known hotel, and I'm overdosing, not off of drugs, alcoholic poisoning. I'm drinking, and I'm throwing up, and I won't stop. I'm throwing up blood. I won't stop drinking.
Oh.
I go down to 55th and Quincy, and I pass out in a hallway. And when I come to, I go to a place where, you know, a lot of us girls went, and I wash up, and I change my clothes, and I go outside. It's now July 24th of 1993. And I'm walking down Quincy. I get to 59th and Quincy, and it's a cleaner's. It's a cleaner's and a little novelty store inside the cleaner's. And I go in, and I buy paraphernalia, and I buy wine, and I buy a ginger ale and a bag of potato chips. That's my breakfast.
Mm.
And I spank the wine. You know how we do, Wild Irish Rub.
Right.
I drink some, and my body starts to shut down right there on the corner. And I sit down on the flower bed. And I put my head down because I don't want to faint. I don't want to pass out. I got money on me. I got dope on me, you know. And I'm little, you know. Somebody could just swoop me up. And I put my head down to counter 10 so I can get this feeling of fainting to go away. But when I put my head down, I hear my great-grandmother saying, Debbie, he will never leave nor forsake you.
Hmm.
And I said, Jesus, I don't know where you are, what you're doing, but you need to come get me now.
Hmm.
And I look up.
Uh-huh.
I look up, and the police are across the street. Long story short, my original charge on July 24th of 1993 is drunken disorderly conduct and assaulting a police officer because they were not going to arrest me, even though I had given them my drugs, even though they knew I was out there prostituting myself, which is illegal.
Right.
They were not going to take me to jail. I went to jail July 24th of 1993. I went 5th District. From 5th District, I went to 1st District. And I'm in 1st District, and I'm on my knees, and I'm crying, and I'm screaming. Because, see, I've been around Alcoholics Anonymous. I've heard the words. I memorized the steps. I know rarely have we seen a person fail, but I have failed. And I want to know how I got here again. Because, see, on July 24th, when I get arrested, that's 19 times. that I've been arrested between March of 1990 and July of 1993. And I look at the clock and it's 10 minutes to 1. Excuse me, it's 10 minutes to 2 on the morning of July 25th of 1993. And I don't ask God nothing. I tell him, if you save me from this, you won't have to save me from it no more.
Amen.
And the process starts.
Now, Deborah, again, I will keep saying this, even when I go back and listen to this broadcast. Your courage is that of a queen. You are a warrior. You are a beacon of hope for so many. And I heard the little tears in your voice as you recount, and that's how we keep it together, because when we forget, that's when we think that we're okay. But we'll never be okay. We will always be. All we do is we just arrest the disease. So my question to you, my friend, how broken were you when you were sitting in those cells?
I was dead. Jails, institution, and death. My body had just not laid down. I was mentally, emotionally, and spiritually bankrupt. I grew up with two denominations, Catholicism and Baptist. And I was going to die. God didn't want me. There was going to be the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. I'm going to hell. So when I called God, I called Grandma's God for the first few months sitting in that jail. For the first month, I'll say, sitting in that jail, I was talking to Grandma's God because I didn't have a God.
Mm-hmm.
I called her God, and he did what she said he would do.
Amen. Amen. So much darkness, so much darkness. So let's step forward into the light. Okay, we talk about the walls of AA, and we talk about, we're going to talk about recovery. Now, so in recovery, we muddle through the wreckage caused by how we lived our lives. How painful was it for you to identify and address that pile?
I went to court. He dismissed everything except for one drug abuse charge. I was looking at 20 years. He dismissed everything and gave me 1 year probation in lieu of treatment. November 15th of 1993, I walked through the doors of the New Joshua Center for Hope. Mm-hmm. By the time I got to New Joshua, I sat in jail from July to October, from July to October when I went to court. And then, of course, you know, I had to wait for them to find me a bed. Mm-hmm. So from July to November, I'm in jail. By the time I got to the New Joshua Center for Hope, I was on step 4. See, I was done. When I called God on July 24th and told him to come get me, and he sent the police, I was done. I had been delivered. I didn't know then. He didn't let me know then that he had relieved me of the obsession and the compulsion, but he had at that moment. And then a little while later, I call out to him again, and I tell him, you know, I'm good. You saved me from this. I'm good. I will go where you tell me to go. I will say what you tell me to say. I will stand as long as you tell me to stand. Step one, I'm powerless. I'm unmanageable. I'm in jail again. Insanity.
Yes.
The rooms say insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. That's not insane. Insane is doing the same thing over and over again, wanting the same result.
Exactly.
That's insane.
Exactly. So I want to share something with you, and I believe that nothing happens by chance. And I didn't even realize this. My sobriety date is July 24th as well.
I know.
That's just amazing. That is just amazing. Okay, so let's step a little forward. I mean, that's just amazing. I tell you right now, that the higher power is just all over the place, you know. Whether people believe it or not, well, for all the evil that's going on in the world, there is a higher power in place that's doing things, great things for people, especially people that are in recovery. So we know we lose much while we're in our addiction. But in recovery, many things are gained and restored. So what has been gained and restored for you?
My self-respect. That's the first thing. No, the first thing is a relationship with God. The second is my respect, how I walk. Because I haven't gained many material things. They don't matter. Now, don't get it wrong. I'm leaking right about now. I need some things. I want some things. And God has placed some angels in my life where those things are going to come to pass. But my courage, my strength, that courage that I had out there in the streets, you know, God has triple-doubled it. And now I'm using it for positive outlook and input into people's lives. You know,
And you do it all the time. You during some of my moments, during some of my moments, I have to tell you that I'll read some of the posts that other people in recovery post, and they really, really bring me through. And though I'm only 6 months into my recovery, I can honestly, certainly say, you know, there are spiritual awakenings if you are patient and you wait. You know, and so we are all born with character defects that follow us back into our sobriety. How hard has it been to acknowledge and define and then change those defects?
Okay. This is going to sound funny. You know I ain't had no defects of character. What are you talking about?
Ooh, girl, you better quit it.
No shortcomings, no defects of character. Come on, I'm second in line to perfect.
I
did my fifth step with Pastor Walter Humphrey, who I call Daddy, you know, you reflect between, you know, your fifth step and you know, doing six and seven, and it didn't take me an hour. It took me 10 minutes because I was entirely ready to have God remove whatever needed to be removed that had me do the things that I had to talk about in five and write down in four. I was humbly asking him to get rid of everything because I no longer wanted to be her. See, when I first got here, I just wanted to stop drinking. I wanted to stop standing on corners. I wanted to stop getting in and out of cars. Now I've thoroughly done one through five, and I don't want to be her anymore. I want to walk different. I want to talk different. I just want to stand different.
It's all right, sister. I'm right here with you.
So I didn't have to. I couldn't recognize anything because he took it.
Mm-hmm.
He took it. So I can't tell you what my defect of character was or what my shortcomings were because he took them. People say I'm arrogant. I'm not arrogant. I know who I am. I know whose I am. I'm not mean. I don't play. This is about my life. And if you don't want it, goodbye. My relationship with God is important to me. Not drinking is important to me. And if you come to me and say you want my help, don't play with me. I will hurt your feelings. Because I don't want to die again. I died out there. I don't want to die again.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are experiencing a spiritual awakening here, you know, and another monumental moment in the life of recovery. And most certainly, the queen for today is Deborah Brooks. We celebrate her life in recovery and her honesty and her integrity and also the relationship that she has with her higher power that has brought her through and so many of us through the darkness. So be patient with me. I want to set up a scene for you, my friend Deborah. I am a newcomer to recovery. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid and lost. How do you greet me? And what words of encouragement do you offer me in that moment?
You're a newcomer, and you're scared. And you don't really know if you want this. The first thing I'm probably going to do is I'm going to hug you and I'm going to whisper, I love you. that I'm going to step back and I'm going to give you my hand and say, hey, my name is Deborah. What's yours? And then I'm going to look at you. And I'm going to look at you not with my eyes, but with my heart. And hopefully in that split second you will see that it's not going to always be like this. If you give me time, I'll sit down and I'll shoot something to you real quick. But I remember being 6 months clean. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting in the New Joshua Center for Hope about to get put out. Mm-hmm. He about to close it down because we clowning and acting a fool.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't leave.
Well,
and he said, what
you
mean
right
you're not going
to
leave? We're going to call the police. I'm not leaving. And I didn't
you
leave.
Go on and talk, my sister. Go on and talk.
I wanted what they had. I wanted what they was giving me. I wanted that God. I wanted that recovery. I wanted to stand.
And how do you stand today?
By the grace of God.
What keeps
That's
you sober?
It.
What keeps you sober?
Prayer. My desire to want to help another sick and suffering alcoholic inside or outside the rooms, serving God, not picking up the first drink, still going to meetings, standing and not caring who's hearing me talk about where I was because that's who I used to be.
Mm-hmm. I have to tell you something. I have to tell you right now, you know, there's so much power that comes through this 45-minute broadcast today that has enlightened me and inspired me to keep me strong. You know, and it all came from the courage of someone who was unafraid to step forward and into the light, to be the beacon of light for somebody else. And I have to tell you about this disease. If you have tuned in today and you're drinking or you're snorting or you're shooting or whatever it is that you're doing, you know, and if nobody understands you in your life that you're around, then you need to get from around them and step into the doors of one of the meetings so that you'll be in a place where other people like yourself understand the disease and understand the allergy that you have. Because I have to tell you right now, it's exactly what Deborah mentioned. What do you call insanity? That's doing something the same way, expecting a different outcome. And if you are around the same people, family members, friends, who may not understand this disease, who may put you down, who may tell you that you're nothing, who have tied their hands with you and have thrown you out, you had better come. You had better come correct. When you walk through those doors, there is forgiveness. There is non-judgment. All you have to do is have the faith and the courage and the belief in yourself. I read something and came to believe. The reason you stand up in front of all those people and you tell your story, it's not necessarily for them solely. It's also letting you know that you have a right to be here. So if you've learned nothing else today, then know that recovery starts when you take that first step. So what I want to do right now, I want to say, listeners, this has been a powerful, powerful segment today, and I want to give Deborah the rights of the final words for today's broadcast. Deborah, what would you like to leave listeners with today?
God, I offer myself to thee to build and do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them will bear witness to thy love, thy power, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen.
Amen. Now, Deborah Brooks, what I want to say, it has been an honor, my queen, to have
God
you
bless.
On the very first segment of Queen. It
wow.
is a memorable moment in my life. You have touched and inspired me. So for your courage today, I thank you, and for your friendship every day, I feel so blessed, and I thank you.
I love you. God bless you. Thank you. I'm humbled and honored to have been here on this day, and I have no other words. I'm just overwhelmed. Thank you.
All right. So, everyone, today we celebrated the wonderful triumph of a beautiful courage, Goldie. Deborah Brooks. Everyone, have a great weekend, and know that you are loved.
God bless.